continuation of the second tape or second interview with Fran Jackson.
So, where were we?
We were comparing the experience at the whole old high school on Franklin Street with the newly integrated high school on Homestead Road. And I think the point I was trying to make is that you'll have a difference in numbers. And that made a difference, both positively and negatively. I think we had far more students who were getting into trouble, more students who experienced academic difficulties and all kinds of issues. And I felt, for the most part, that the school was not responsive. That was another question you asked earlier about the degree. To what degree did the African American teachers offer support? I think that they did offer support, but they could not do it openly. Because to be honest with you, it was almost open season on African American teachers. The perception was that they were not as challenging, they were not as good, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result, they were threatened being in this newly integrated situation.
How many of them were there?
I don't know the numbers. Now, you know, there are some documents at the high school where they can give you the numbers, but I can recall teachers who were considered our very best. I mean, they taught the upper level courses at Lincoln, and then when they went to the Chapel Hill High, they were teaching almost remedial type courses. And so,
what did you think about that?
It really began to form my views that this is, I don't know if I said it was racist, but I thought it was very definitely racist because, for example, our principal at Lincoln High School, Mr. Charles McDougall, when he went to the newly integrated school, he was the assistant principal. And the fact that Lincoln High School itself was no longer a school, it was a perfectly fine building. They could have used it as a school. Why not put the white kids and the black kids at Lincoln? No, they closed the school. So there were a lot of issues I felt that. And so my point, though, is that the African-American teachers could not be as supportive or at least as outwardly supportive as they may have wanted to be because they, too, were under threat. And I felt that people wanted to challenge them, challenge their knowledge. It was just a systemic kind of thing that anything that was African American was less than. You know, I can recall some teachers say, oh, she may have gotten her degree from Central, as if that was less than if you got your degree from Elon or Chapel Hill, of course.
Well, let me ask you, then, what was your perception of the quality of the teaching you got from the black teachers versus the white teachers?
Well, I can't equate them because the only reason I can is because the majority of my African American teachers were in the early grades, and I thought they were very good and very strong, and they taught us the basic skills. By the time I got to high school, the majority of my teachers were white. And I think there was definitely a different teaching style. I think that the style was one more of, it was not as directive. It was more, let me give you some open-ended questions and you respond to that. Almost more like what you would have in a college level. And I think they prided themselves on doing that.
From which?
At Chapel Hill High School, right.
From the white teachers?
From the white teachers. But it's not to suggest that that style of teaching is all that much better. It's just that for years they had students who were acclimated towards college, and they were accustomed to that kind of teaching style. But in order to be a really good teacher is to be able to take a student who may not have that acclimation or orientation, and to teach that person, you know, what are the underlying skills? I mean, I can recall people saying, write a paper, and not giving a lot of specific directions about what to do. Now, if your father is an English professor, you can go home and say, proof this, and tell me how I should approach this, then naturally you're going to get an A. But if your family does not have, you know, you don't have college professors at home, then we were definitely at a disadvantage. So I think, and the teachers did not have to work as hard, because the work was being done at home, basically. The college professor parent was telling that kid, here you have a 5-paragraph essay, you have an introduction, and so forth and so on. Whereas the teacher here, even if they just kind of glossed over it, those of us who needed them most for that kind of direction did not provide it. So I don't think that they were, I think they were a little bit more arrogant, they were a little bit more haughty about, well, I know this and I know that. But in terms of really the quality and the ability to train people who were not, who did not come from advantaged backgrounds, no, they did not have the skill to do that.
So their skill was in getting the academically gifted students educated, but they, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it seems to me what my interpretation of what you're saying is that they didn't have the ability to teach the middle and the lower end of the academically gifted or non-gifted, whatever, student.
I think that's exactly the case. And also, not only, well, their style of teaching, it was much more lecture-oriented, as opposed to giving experiential kinds of activity, hands-on activities for all kids to be a part of it. Now, Charlene can tell you, she had a very different type of experience, and Charlene was also on the school newspaper. So she definitely has a very different kind of experience. Now, I can't recall with Alethea. I can't remember about Alethea. I know Alethea was involved in some things, and Alethea was a cheerleader. So they were, you know, a little bit more active.
So what I hear you saying again is that at the new high school, the African-American students did join the clubs and were active, not just in athletics, but in other areas as well. Is that fair to say?
I think to a limited degree, and partly it's because the increased numbers. But I don't think there was an active effort to make sure that each one of the clubs out there had an African American presence. So the other point too is that I was there at the time when it first integrated. My sisters came along a couple of years later, and so they had an opportunity to hopefully, you know, maybe make a few changes. But even in the changes that they made, from my observation, they were still cultivating relationships and training those kids who were better able, and those kids who, for whatever reason, did not have those skills, the knowledge that they needed in order to succeed, then they were not going to give them that. And you know, you've been in school long enough to know that there are some unwritten rules, some unwritten kinds of expectations that I think kids from disadvantaged backgrounds were just not aware of them. And I mean, I include myself in that. Although I felt within my community, I did not view myself as being disadvantaged. But coming into Chapel Hill High School, I was treated almost as being disadvantaged. And I think that was the other kind of unwritten thing, that we were all treated as a group as being, as really not having much to offer the school. And and I remember too, the when I was growing up, the band at Lincoln High had one of the best bands in the state. And they would play, of course, traditional music, but they also played some good old rock and roll. And they would get in the street, they would just break it down. And I remember going to Chapel Hill, I don't recall any of those students joining the band. I remember the band remaining literally all white, and it was the worst. It was the worst music I'd ever heard. I remember just being horrified. They were very stiff. They would march in and play these little tunes and march out. And I just felt that there's nothing here. I mean, it's just, ugh. So,
Did you look at it as sort of white music?
Yeah, I sure did. And I just felt they were very stiff, and they just didn't offer much. There wasn't a show to it. There was no pizzazz.
Did they have, at the new high school, black history, black culture?
The first, the last couple of years that I was there, they did not. Now, I know that it was either my sister Alethea's class or Charlene's class where, through some of their protest, they just demanded that they offer black history. And I think they were sort of mimicking the college students. You've got to remember, at that time, colleges across the country, there was an eruption of protests either about Vietnam or a greater emphasis and attention to African American history. And it was not unique to the white colleges. The biggest protest was at Howard University. And they were protesting for more black history. So I think what happened at Chapel Hill High was really a reflection of sort of a national.
I understand that there was an uprising at Chapel Hill High School. Mm-hmm. Were you there when it occurred?
No, it happened after I left. I think my sisters were very much involved in it. And we often talk about that even sometimes. But I know Lethea definitely, I think they were threatening to suspend one or both at one time.
What are the things that you heard that stick in your mind about the reasons for the uprising?
I think there were a number of issues. One, they felt that the teachers were being insensitive, and I think in a couple of instances there might have been some type of incident to spark widespread protest among the African-American students. And I think it was something like they were going to demote the one of the black teachers or coaches, and I'm not sure what the specifics, but I do know that that kind of sparked a reaction.
Was that Coach Pierman?
I think so, yeah. And, I mean, he's just considered an icon in our society here at Chapel Hill. And I just don't recall the details because, keep in mind, I was away in Charlotte at the time of the protest occurred. What else? I know that they did want a black history course, and they got a black teacher from North Carolina Central to teach that course. And that was just part of it. I don't recall much else. But I'll tell you a difference. And one thing that I can say is I've had the dubious honor of having gone through the school system, having observed my children go through the school system, and also having taught in the system. So I've been able to really reflect on current issues with some understanding of the past. So,
what are your reflections?
What are my reflections? Well, they are. We've got a long way to go. The problems have not been resolved. I think that the kids today are dealing with some of the same issues. I do think that across the board, though, there's greater interaction among the kids. But sometimes I don't know how really honest it is. And what I mean by that is I find that it's a lot more acceptable for interracial dating. But if you'll observe, much of that type of relationship is occurring between black males and white females. And when that happens, very often black females are left out of the loop. So I see that as a trend that my generation, we did not have to deal with as much, but it's clearly much more of an issue today. I think another point of reflection is the fact that I think one thing that hasn't changed is if you would look at teaching assignments, you will find that it's still quite segregated. In other words, there are still too few African American teachers teaching upper level courses. So I think that's something that clearly has not changed. One of the things that I observed, of course I haven't taught in the public schools for a long time, but what I did observe was the fact that there were still a lot of kids who were going through that assimilationist kind of, what you have to keep in mind is that by middle school, all children are experiencing adolescence and they are undergoing some kind of ethnic identity. As teenagers, a natural question you have is, who am I? And they want to know it from multiple perspectives. And I think that for white children, who they are is affirmed each and every day. It's implied. It's taught. It's just known. And not only in the schools, but the media, everywhere around them. They know, maybe one day I can become president. You know, all these things. Whereas for the African American child, that is not the case. And when they ask, who am I, the response is often more negative than positive. And I found that when we had those African American programs, Black History Day or something, that a lot of teachers were real concerned because a lot of times the African-American students would misbehave, and so they naturally run to the African-American teacher. Why are they misbehaving? Why are they acting a fool out there? And my response was, well, I think sometimes they are embarrassed. They resent the fact, they may not be able to articulate it, but they resent the fact that we've taken a day out to celebrate their heritage when in fact it should be just the natural course of things. It's like you're marginalizing a group that's already marginalized. So, and they're still doing it. I mean, they still have, they're now calling it Multicultural Day, and you all bringing your bean pie or your this or your that or your tacos or your whatever. And it's not getting at the heart of things. And the kids, particularly by the time they reach high school, they realize, you know, if you appoint an African-American teacher to something, they can tell if this person really has power or if it's just a token position. And I think that's part of what the kids in the 60s were protesting against, because they felt they had seen from others that protest was going to make a difference. I think the kids today they are pretty complacent. I don't see them protesting in any way. And they're dropping out like crazy. They're flunking out like crazy. And as a parent, I'm really, really concerned. And I'm really concerned about the African-American male, because they are really, as a group, African-American males are just not making it in mainstream America. Those are my reflections.
I'd like to go back to one other point, and then just let you express anything you feel you would like to say that I haven't asked you. But you had mentioned Charles McDougall was not chosen as the principal, and I wish you would go back and revisit that and tell me your thinking about why you felt he should have been the principal instead of the person who was appointed principal.
Mm-hmm. Well, the person who was appointed principal was a white female, Marshbanks. I can't remember Miss Marshbanks' first name.
Okay.
Yeah, that was it. And when I think about Miss Marshbanks now, Miss Marshbanks was a she was a real masculine female. I mean, when I think about her, there wasn't a feminine thing about her. But nevertheless, she I don't remember anything about her, just her name. And I remember, and it's funny because in high school I never thought about her other than she's the principal, and I know it's like a policeman. If you see a policeman, you're likely to slow down or think about, am I applying all the rules? That's kind of how I viewed her. But as an adult, I remember and I can see her face and think about her, and really she was, and I'm thinking now, in reflection of the women's movement, that she probably had to behave in that way to get that job. Because I'm sure it was unusual for a woman to be a principal of a high school, and particularly one of the best high schools in the state. So, I mean, that was quite remarkable. I have to give her credit for that. And I'm wondering if she became principal because they had a choice between her and Mr. McDougall. I mean, she was principal of the high school on Franklin Street, so, and I don't know how long she was principal there. Mr. McDougall, I think, was quite capable of being a principal at Chapel Hill High. And I kind of resented the fact that it was really a culmination of things. We did not have did we have the mascot? I think we did have the tiger. They took the thing. What's the mascot now? Tigers? Yeah, but it was the Wildcats when we were on. I think they changed that. I don't think when we first started that we had the Tigers. No. I thought we had them. I mean, it was like they say, okay, y'all come on over here. And there was nothing that I can recall.
School song, colors, trophies were all from Chapel Hill High School.
Uh-huh.
Was there anything there from Lincoln? Any heritage from Lincoln?
Not that I can recall. There was nothing.
And not your principal. Was your principal an icon also, the way Mr. Pierman, Coach Pierman was?
I think there was a lot more they were respected equally. But I think Coach Pierman, because he was coach, a great coach too. Lincoln High was ranked tops in the state, I mean, among black schools, for football. I think they did well with basketball. I know the band was considered great. So, for a small school, Lincoln High had a lot. They did a lot.
So there was no identity there.
Oh,
is
no.
Is that fair to say?
That's fair to say. And then you're thinking about a population that knew what it was like. In other words, when we merged in 67, a large group of the African-American students knew Lincoln High School. And so when we all had to, it was forced, and I don't think they were as happy to go there as people wanted us to be there. I mean, I say them only because I'm talking about the students from Lincoln. I'd already gone to the old Chapel Hill High. But, yeah, it was, again, it's that whole idea of, well, let's ignore them. They don't exist. And so I think the merger really helped accentuate that point. And sometimes things were happening so fast we couldn't articulate it. And again, you have to keep in mind that a lot of us were, by junior and senior year, we're thinking about new directions. And a lot of us thinking about, let's get out of here. Let's get out of Dodge. So I think that was part of what was going on as well. And when I think about it now, it was, I don't know when they changed it to the Tigers, which what they have now in colors, but...
maybe after the rising.
Maybe so.
Was there an element that wanted separate but equal in the black community? I mean, it sounds like you had such an interesting high school in Lincoln High, and the teachers were your role models and your advocates. I can certainly understand if there would have been a group that wanted separate but equal.
Not that I'm aware of. I can tell you this, though. You've got to keep in mind the context. Chapel Hill is a town that has always been predominantly white. The African-American community has always been small and always the underdogs. We've always had to work in some menial capacity at the university. And I think we, more so than say some African Americans in Durham, we have a whole different context. We were more brainwashed to believe that what was white was right. Because in Durham, you had a lot of really much more prosperous black businesses. You had a much more prominent middle class. And so, they were fighting tooth and nail. I mean, you had North Carolina Central University, which was a beacon for the black middle class there. And so you have a very different circumstance. So I think initially, from my perspective, no. I think people really readily agreed that the new facility on Homestead Road was state of the art. It was at that time, and even today, just to let you know just how much state-of-the-art, 30 years later, that is a very nice school. That is a very nice facility. And Lincoln High School could not compete. I do feel that a lot of African Americans in the community felt, yeah, it's a better building, but are our students really getting the quality education? Are they getting the time and attention and the nurturing needed to succeed? And I'm not sure about that. Excuse me for a minute.
I had asked you about an element within the Afro-American community that wanted separate but equal. And you were saying, no, you didn't perceive that.
No, not at that time. Although, I think today, nationwide, particularly when you look at the education system, there is a growing interest in separate but equal, with an emphasis on equal, but separate, because it's obvious nationally that the schools are not responsive to the needs of African-American children.
Is there anything else that I haven't covered that you'd like to talk about? Feel free.
Well, I think what I hope one outcome of this study and this documentary will be to heighten educators' sensitivity to the needs of responding to students, regardless of the student's ethnic or gender or whatever makes them different. and just trying to ensure that all students experience success. We cannot afford to just have the same few or the same type of people become successful. We've got to have a much wider representation. And that's what I truly believe that we and when I say responsive to the needs, I mean all teachers being responsive, regardless of their race or ethnicity. And try to think at a higher level and not allow stereotypes to just dominate their thinking about people.
Thanks. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.